My name is Ryan, and I'm an alcoholic. First, I'd like to thank God and everyone in this meeting. I couldn't have done it without you. My sobriety date is November 12th, 2009. That is the day that God, I think, gave me a moment of clarity, and I could, seen how hopeless I was, and realized I couldn't live with or without alcohol. Materialistically, I had, what most guys would want, a wife, a kid, a house, cars, even a dog. And, but I was just hopeless. I broke down crying, and I knew I needed help, and I seen how Alcoholics Anonymous was working in my sister's life, so I called her and asked her for help, and she brought me to this meeting. And I was scared to death, and after the meeting, I met a bunch of people, and a couple guys got my phone number, and the next day, one guy called me at 11 o'clock in the morning and asked how I was doing, wanted to take me to a meeting, and I went to a meeting down in Apollo Beach with him, and heard two really good speakers there, could relate, and asked them to sponsor me, and thank God I did that, because these steps and these traditions are so simple, but to me they were like written in Chinese. I did not understand them, and he read the big book with me, took me through 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's been a great journey, and he's become a good friend, and the steps are just amazing. It's designed for living. It's now I'm just a regular husband, a regular dad, a son, a brother. I can just try to be a regular person, not try to hurt anybody each day. And when I came here, I just wanted to learn how to not drink for a couple months and then be able to just drink normal again. But it's become so much more than just not drinking. It's designed for living, and it's been a great journey. It just keeps getting better, and I just want to thank you all and God, and introduce you to, I have my sponsor speaking for me tonight, Ryan.
My name is Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. I got sober April the 28th of 2007. I got a sponsor. This is my home group here. That's pretty cool. Ryan's celebrating. I think everybody within 10 miles of this meeting is happy he's sober, to be honest with you. I'm also happy he's wearing his own tie tonight. When I started sponsoring him a year ago, he came to our anniversary a couple weeks after that, and he just had like a white shirt on, and I had to tie the tie for him to put it on. And I remember we were out in the parking lot, and I was telling him a story about when I was growing up. My mom ran a cemetery, my dad ran a funeral home, and we lived upstairs of the funeral home my dad worked at. So when I needed a tie put on me, he had to have me lay down and to put the tie on me. And so I told him that even though I had to put the tie on for him, at least I didn't have to have him lay down and do it. And he's wearing his own tie tonight, too, and I think he tied it himself. So I think in a year he's at least learned how to do that, which is an accomplishment. But I think most of all, what's been the coolest thing over the past year is I know maybe like for the first 7 months or so, was just trudging through it, Hadn't really fallen in love with Alcoholics Anonymous yet. Was just coming to meetings. He'd done his steps, but like really hadn't made it quite yet. And we were doing elections one night, and for some reason he stood up to make coffee for the group. And it was like almost unanimous. Everyone in the room shot their hands up for this guy to make coffee. It was almost like they could tell he wasn't going to make it, unless he was going to make coffee. And so he starts making coffee, and I think what happened is he sat in the front by the door and got to shake everybody's hand and meet everybody every single week. He just got to meet you guys. He got to meet the people of his home group that he hadn't met before. And over the past 5 or 6 months or so, his eyes have a sparkle to him. He's fallen in love with Alcoholics Anonymous just from making coffee. And I guess not really just from making coffee, but just from meeting his home group, meeting the people here that that's what's kept him here. That's what's kept me here a long time, too. And but at any rate, I will start off. When I was born, from the time my mom's water broke till the time I was delivered was 30 minutes. So I was in a fast hurry then, and nothing has really changed too much now. I'm always usually trying to get somewhere other than where I am at this exact moment. And I grew up in a little home in Southern California on the northwest side of the mountains of Los Angeles in Ventura County. And, you know, all I know is that it always seemed like I was uncomfortable, you know. And there was this kid I grew up with. His name was Kyle in my neighborhood. He lived on the other side of the neighborhood from me. And I knew I just always wanted Kyle's bike, you know, or I wanted to climb trees like Kyle could. Like, if I could climb trees and do tricks on my bike like he could, then I would finally be happy, you know. But there's just some kind of unrest inside of me that was never really happy with where I was at. And, you know, just to make a long story short, I got the privilege of getting my first drunk when I was 15 years old. It was on a Friday night. Four of my friends got together at my friend's house. The five of us sat in his kitchen. We poured, we got a liter and a half of Jack Daniels. We poured five shots onto the table. And at this time, I was 15 years old. I was about 190 pounds. I was 5'4". So I was short. I was fat. And my body hadn't hit this life change that everyone else in the room had. So I was short, fat, and I had a high-pitched voice. And I was absolutely convinced from seeing my parents drink in the past that I was going to have fun that night, you know? And so I remember I stood back, and I took this shot, and I put it straight back just like I saw on TV, and it hit my throat, and it burned, and I felt it come all the way down my chest here, and it got to my stomach, and it was warm, and it seemed like for the first time in my life, my shoulders just relaxed a little bit. I breathed for the first time, and you know what? I didn't get tall. I didn't get skinny. My voice didn't get deep that night, but I didn't give a damn about any of it. And, you know, I don't know really what happened that night. I know the next morning I woke up in someone's bed with vomit down my shirt and a trail of puke leading up to where the bed was. And the people that lived there were upset that I hadn't thrown up in their house. You know, and that was my first experience with alcohol. And for the next 6 years of my life, it was always something similar to that. And, you know, I can tell you maybe 2.5 years later, I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I can tell you that if you make it to Alcoholics Anonymous, you haven't had a successful drinking career, period. If you make it to Alcoholics Anonymous after you've been drinking for 2.5 years, you've really not had a successful drinking career. And my experience was I was 18 years old. I was here because the state needed me to be here. I still lived at my parents' house. I didn't even have a girlfriend, so I couldn't have been married. I had never had kids, so I couldn't have had any estranged children. And that's what I thought an alcoholic was. So when I went to these meetings, I never identified. I never looked for what the solution was because I had all these preset qualifications that I didn't meet up to. And the truth is, I just didn't stick around. I never got a sponsor. I never got a home group. I never had anyone explain to me that what makes me alcoholic is I have some kind of physical compulsion where when I put alcohol into my body, something physically changes inside of me where I'm going to continue to drink no matter what the circumstances are. Something else that makes me alcoholic is that even though I don't want to drink or I know why I shouldn't drink, I still have some kind of lingering mental obsession that this time it's going to be different. This time I'm just going to have a couple. This time I'm going to go home early. This time I'm going to go back to school tomorrow. I'm going to go back to work tomorrow. I'm not going to hurt these people. I'm not going to end up these places. And that's the mental obsession that I have, that this time it's going to be different. And those are the things that really make me alcoholic. You know, says the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. But I never talked to anybody to figure those things out. You know, I just thought that the way my life was, maybe not alcoholic. And, you know, moving quickly, when I left there, like I said, I was 18 years old. There was something about Alcoholics Anonymous that stuck with me. Even though I didn't think I was alcoholic, there was something about the people there that had stuck with me. And I didn't even know it at the time. It was just like a lingering little piece of something in the back of my brain. And by the time I was 19, maybe a year or so later, I drank a liter and a half of whiskey every single day of my life. I couldn't hold a job, couldn't hold a relationship, I couldn't hold on to money, I couldn't pay any of my bills, couldn't do anything. All I know is that I woke up every day, and it seemed like whatever it is back here hurt constantly when I would stand up in the morning. And usually the first thing I would do would be to vomit out this like highlighter green stuff, the stomach acid, because I never really ate. I just drank whiskey all the time. And my skin had turned a little bit yellow, and my heart kind of stuttered when I stood up in the morning. And, you know, this was just me being 19 years old. And, you know, like I said, something about Alcoholics Anonymous has stuck with me. And, you know, I quickly found the best person that I could be when I was 19 years old was having my mom pay for my half of an abortion, you know, and getting to that clinic that morning, at 8 o'clock after I'd been up until 6 o'clock drinking the night before. I looked that girl right in the eyes in a room full of people of about this many, told her she was a whore. If she couldn't keep her legs closed, we wouldn't have been there. She started crying in front of everybody. Got done with the procedure, dropped her back at her place, pushed her out of the car, had her crawl up 3 flights of stairs. I got on a plane, and I left the state of Florida for a week. Didn't talk to her for the whole week. That was the best guy I knew how to be. And, you know, what my life quickly got to was I couldn't stand living anymore. You know, it was just so unbearable. I know that there's always at least one person in the room that can relate when I say that when I woke up in the morning, there always seemed to be an instant, just an instant where I was conscious, but my eyes had not opened up yet, just a split second, and I absolutely hated the fact that I was awake. I knew the day was going to be so hard, and I couldn't do it, you know? And then my eyes would open up, and I would realize that I was actually awake, even though I didn't want to be. And, you know, as this weird stuff started happening, a lot of odd circumstances that led me, you know, one night, I woke up like two or three in the morning in some bushes in a neighbor's house. I don't know how I ended up there, but it was weird waking up there. And but I came home, and with my head at the pillow, I prayed for the first time in my life. I said, God, kill me or change something in my life. I don't want to wake up tomorrow. And I woke up the next day, and that split second happened just like it did every other day, but with like a vigilant anger that I'd never had before because I remembered saying that prayer and I was alive that morning. And, you know, but I quickly got the opportunity that I guess I'd been looking for, I guess. And, you know, maybe 6 weeks later, I'm in Buffalo, New York, where my parents live. It was a Friday that I flew up there. I was just going to be up there for the weekend. I hadn't drank all day Friday. Didn't want to drink, hadn't drank all day. I get up there. You know, everything is going well. 10 or 11 o'clock at night starts to roll around. I guess I'm getting a little itchy, you know. An old friend of mine that from when I lived up there called me and just said, you know, come hang out for a little bit. And so I said, okay, it sounds good. I told my mom I was going to go to this restaurant I used to work at, and she met me at the door. She grabbed me by my shoulder. She looked me right in the eye and said, Ryan, I don't care what you do tonight. Don't get drunk. Don't do it. This isn't what this trip is about. And she was looking at someone who maybe 5 years prior had given his life to alcohol but didn't know it, you know. She knew it, but I didn't. And my response to her is, Mom, don't worry. You got nothing to worry about. I'm just going to go out for a little bit. I'll come right back home. I hit the door of that restaurant. Manager said, hey, good to see you. First drink's on me. I said, sounds good. Let me get 4 Long Island iced teas. Pound of 4 all Long Islands down. The last thing I remember that night is being at the bar across the street, 10 shots of whiskey lined up in front of me, putting every single one of them down right in the row. I woke up 7:30 the morning after with on my parents' front yard, them walking out to scoop me up off the grass. We got to the front door. My mom looked me right in the face and said, I can't wait for you to leave here. I don't want to see you anymore. I hadn't even been there for 24 hours. And so they put me upstairs, and I woke up later that afternoon, and I didn't really know what had happened because I was a blackout drinker, but I woke up knowing something just didn't feel right, and I went downstairs, and my dad asked me the same question he asked me just about every day of the year, what the hell is wrong with you? And for the first time in a long time, I don't know why I did it, but I looked at him, and I said, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I just can't stop drinking, you know? And I think that I wouldn't normally have said that except for that prayer I had said maybe 6 weeks before about asking God to change something in my life. And, you know, long story short, they had some plans about some places they wanted to send me, and I said, well, let me just give AA a shot. There's something very powerful to be said about the seed that's planted in Alcoholics Anonymous. When you don't think you're alcoholic, you don't want to be there, and for some reason, 3 years later, you want to go to Alcoholics Anonymous when the shit hits the fan. And my dad's boss's wife was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous at that time, so he said, call this lady, and when you get back into town, I came back, tried to control my drinking one last time. I would like to tell you guys that the drunk I just told you about was my last drunk, but the truth was, you know, I kept trying to do it, and really what my last drunk was, I'd gone over to Orlando to hang out with this girl that I tried to hook up with in high school, and we went to this bar, and I got wasted, and then the time finally came, we got back to her room where she made the move, and I just started crying. And so, and not really for any reason specific, but but really because I'd gotten drunk again, you know, and that was really it. I hated the way I was when I didn't want to drink, but for some reason I was going to drink every single day. And I had gotten drunk again that night, and I couldn't stand it, and I started crying, and it was really awkward. And I just slept on the floor that night. I got up the next morning, I went back home and called this lady. And, you know, it was almost like I could hear her smile on the other end of the phone. And because she got to help someone in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she took me to a meeting, and she gave me a big book and a 12 and 12, And I don't really know what happened at the meeting, but I know what happened after the meeting. And she took me, she sat me down in her car, she spent the next hour and a half 12-stepping me. She didn't tell me how much of a screw-up I was, how much of a loser I was, how much my parents had told her any of these things. She just told me what her life was like and what her life was like as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she told me that if I didn't believe her, just to read the big book a little bit and see if I could find myself in there. And if I could, then this is probably the place for me. I went home that night. I read maybe 8 pages into Bill's story, realized I needed to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she hooked me up with the guy that brought me to this meeting. And the guy that brought me to this meeting, the first thing I noticed when I got here was a lot of gorgeous women. And I thought, God damn, being an alcoholic don't seem so bad. But what's important is that night, a lot of guys came up to me. A lot of guys approached me. And, they didn't care too much about giving me their number, telling me to call them if I felt like drinking. They took my number. They called me the next day. They picked me up to take me to meetings, and they took care of me. And, I remember the moment I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I was maybe 30, 45 days sober. On the other coast, St. Pete, they were putting in a bid for FICCIPA, the Florida Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. They were throwing this night volleyball glow-in-the-dark tournament. It sounded like the stupidest thing in the world to go do. Play volleyball in the night with glow-in-the-dark stuff. But I was just told to go. I didn't know like I had anything better to do that night. So I went with these people, and we had a blast. And I realized at the end of the night that for those 2 hours that I was there, I hadn't thought. I just didn't think about anything, And I hadn't really had that experience in several years where I just didn't think about stuff. And I realized that maybe this thing was working in my life. And I picked up a 30-day chip. It was the first time I'd been sober for 30 days since I was 15 when I started drinking. And, just going forward from there, the steps in my home group and God saved my life. I had no idea how to live sober. I was 21 when I got here. I thought I was going to be the only person that was 21 years old in AA. And here I come to find out that there's a lot of people that get sober at any point in time because they just can't bear the pain in their life anymore, and all they want to do is die. And they can't die because they're too afraid to, and they can't stop drinking because they don't know how to. So they come here. And, if you're new in this room tonight, if you're coming back, anything at all, really the only thing that's required of you to do, find somebody that's been through the 12 steps, pick up the kit, the spiritual tools that they have, and ask them how to use them. And, you'll probably stay sober through it. If you just do what that person suggests that you should do, and you work the 12 steps in your life. Thanks.
Happy Thanksgiving. Just an alcoholic. Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I've been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would have liked, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flashed into my mind in which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand that love is, and we understand what service is, so let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard the erring member of the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness, consideration, and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we are not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.